Hey, what's up, everybody? Jeremy here, and this is your Create Your Own Life show. Excited to be hanging out with you today. And this is an episode I've been working on for a little bit as my team has really been pushing me to put together some episodes on these things I rant on privately. And they do take a little bit more time in order to put together. As I mentioned, I'm still kind of getting over a little bit of a cold, so got some Ricola, and hopefully that's going to help with any coughing or anything like that. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm excited to cover this with you guys today. And those of you that are jumping on YouTube and on Rumble, thank you so much. We've been growing pretty quickly on Rumble, so thank you. I know for a while we were really struggling to figure out what that looks like and what growth looks like over there. And now we're seeing quite a bit of it. So thank you if you've been checking us out over there. If you've been checking us out over on YouTube, thank you. As you've recently brought us over 10,000, thank you so much. I've said a lot recently. The definition of what a podcast is has changed so much recently, and we're seeing our video views are now starting to pass our audio only views. So thank you to those of you out there that are doing that, and it also is a big reward to us since we've really focused on putting together a great video show in the last year. As I mentioned, we do want to make another camera upgrade soon, but I think this is pretty good for the time being as it's kind of predictable and we can have a pretty good product put together here for you. So I hope you guys are enjoying it. Today, I want to talk about something that I actually wrote about in my book and I'm usually ranting about quite often, and that's education in the education system. And interestingly enough, I was supposed to talk about this on Jenna Ellis in the morning last week. And the guest before me ended up being Vivek Ramaswamy, who just said he's running for president. And they ended up talking about his book, Woke Inc. So because of that, I ended up having to think quickly on my feet and talk about wokeness as a religion, which is something I talk about quite a bit as well. So I was excited that I had a lot of notes prepared for this to kind of talk to you guys about this today, about our education system, where it comes from, what's wrong with it, and what we can do to kind of rescue it or put something back together. Just a reminder before we get into this, hit subscribe wherever you're at, as it does help us to make a bigger impact, grow the show, and to reach a wider audience. I'm enjoying these conversations with you, and I hope you are doing the same as well. Got my good cup of coffee today. I make French press coffee usually first thing in the morning. Later in the day, it's either pour over or in the espresso maker as well. So I'm a big coffee nerd. I probably drink too much of it. But where did the American education system come from? And I'm going to have a lot of articles because I actually read through a lot of pieces on like JSTOR and stuff like that to kind of put this together. But our current education system, where does it come from? It actually comes from, it's influenced by the humanistic school, which is going through Europe in the 16th, 17th hundreds, 1800s. But where it really comes from in its current form, and what's closest to what we have, is the Austro-Hungarian education model that was in the 19th century, so the 1800s. And you have to understand what education was in Europe. One of the first people to really promote education was Charlemagne. So we're talking, you know, not hundreds of years ago, but almost 1,000 years ago. Was Charlemagne to really promote that. And but Charlemagne was one of the first ones to promote that because he was illiterate, and literacy was really important because literacy opened a lot of doors to you, whether it be business, whether it be other things. But really at that point in time, the only people that were educated were clergy. They were the only people that had any money. He was trying to open it to more people. It didn't really take up the way they had hoped, but we're seeing that the reason education starts being standardized by the Austro-Hungarians is they want educated soldiers, soldiers that can work together better, can cooperate better, can read dispatches and things like that if need be, and that really became the initial purpose for education. And we see education picking up in America. Early on, really, the 16th and 1700s is something called normal schools. And these were kind of your first like formative schools, a lot of them starting in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, places like that. And normal schools were just reading, writing, and arithmetic. They were just really the kind of the basics. But they weren't really like federally standardized or state standardized or anything like that. And then we see during the Industrial Revolution, so now we're kind of in that same time frame when the Austro-Hungarians did something, because they did this around 1850, 1860. We see the Industrial Revolution start to pick up not long after that. So the Americans aren't far behind the Austro-Hungarians in putting together a school system, but they're very influenced by it because they look at it and they say, okay, they have an elementary school, they have a high school, and they have a university system. That's a lot of where our system comes from. And from there, excuse me, there's that first cough. It ends up being put together by Horace Mann in Massachusetts, and we have the first U.S. Schools, which are the first kind of Industrial Revolution schools. So what are the purpose of those schools? Workers, people that can read a direction, run a machine, run other people. This wasn't really about creating people that could think outside of the box, creating people that could run a business. The Industrial Revolution had a need for workers. And so I think it's kind of interesting when we're seeing where education comes from. It's first a need for military service, then it's a need for workers. So this isn't really a system that's built for people that create things, build things, create new things. It really is for the fact of like handling need in a lot of ways. And that's kind of how it ends up being, really. That education system is what we end up going then through pretty much all the 20th century is this system of, you know, you have a grammar school and a high school, then a university. And we'll talk about university rates and how those have changed over the years in a couple minutes. And then there isn't really one overarching body until Jimmy Carter creates the Department of Education in 1979. So before that point in time, the curriculum of each school or each state was up to the state. It's a states' rights issue. It was never a federal issue because the Department of Education was not created by the Constitution. It was not something created by that. And what the Department of Education does, primarily it handles a lot of grants, Pell Grants, all the student loans of the Department of Education, but they're also responsible for curriculum. So we have a kind of this federalized curriculum, this like top-down curriculum. And that's why we see a lot of, you know, what's getting changed at the federal level is a big problem. And culturally, it's a big problem too, right? Because states are very different from things you should have to learn in Florida versus Alabama versus Michigan versus New Jersey. The things you need to know are very different. So to say these are the federal standards and these are what you need to know, it's kind of a problem. And there's a lot of money being thrown at the Department of Education. It's very expensive. And there's a lot of what we're going to get into in a few minutes, a lot of Marxist ideas in the Department of Education. So now I want to take a look at universities. In 1950, 5% of the U.S. population at that point in time was went to a university, and they were paying about $500 a semester. Oh my gosh, $500 a semester. Now you have to remember the U.S. dollar was worth substantially less. How do we look this up? 2022 dollar in 1950. I guess I'm curious to see. All right, $1 in 1950 is worth 12 in 2022. So let's take a look. So let's do the math here. 12. On my phone, if you guys can't see this, 1214 times 500. So you're looking at about $6,000 a semester. So it's interesting because that rate of what we're paying now, because I think a lot of students are paying way more than that, that's not even keeping up with inflation. It's outpacing inflation big time. But we're seeing that based on that, then if the lost my train of thought here. Sorry, Mayor Pete. Fox News actually had a quote from me recently about trains and Mayor Pete in Ohio. But anyway, so if you're looking at $1 in 1950 in 2022 is worth $12.14, that would make that semester tuition around $6,600. So we're still looking at the cost of college for a lot of places is outpacing the dollar by a lot. So like I went to Seton Hall University in New Jersey, and this is, gosh, 2005 is when I went to school, so a long time ago now. And a year, so that's two semesters, was $30,000. So if we're to take that, you know, dollar price inflation, 6,600 times two, we're looking at like $13,000 and some change. So that's double the inflation rate. So we're seeing the cost is way outpacing it. And sure, it was my decision, but I graduated with a history degree. There's not a whole lot you do with a history degree. Now let's take a look at this progression over time. The biggest jump, there's kind of this like steady growth of like 1% a year, 0.5% a year from the 5% in 1950. Excuse me. But it jumps to 21% in 1970. And I was actually surprised by the modern number because I thought it was going to be a lot higher because it feels like a lot higher, but it also has to do with, I think, where we live in the country. It's at 37% now, 37% of all people that could go to college do. So that's, it's kind of interesting. And as I mentioned, I think that when we're looking at it, there's also like, do people use those college degrees? So according to a 2018 study by CNBC, nearly 40% of college grads take a career after graduation that does not require a degree. So we're looking at 30, let's do some math here. So we're looking at 37% of the population times 0.6. So we're still looking, we're looking at only 22% actually end up working in a job that requires a degree. So that's a big problem too. It was also found that business majors have a 47% and education majors have a 50%. Chance of being underemployed, whereas engineering majors only have a 29% chance and science majors have a 30% chance. Well, that's because science and engineering are very much in need and they're things we should be focusing on because those do kind of move the ball forward. So I wanted to take a look now at the 25 most common jobs. I hope you guys are finding this interesting how I'm putting this together. I'm just trying to kind of lay out the current scene of education. So if we're looking at here, this is according to Indeed. Oh, look at that. They got their pretty little Ukraine flower on the top. All right. So the most common jobs in America, number one, cashier. Number two, food preparation worker. Number three, stocking associate. Number four, laborer. Number five, janitor. Number six, construction worker. Seven, bookkeeper. Eight, server. Nine, medical assistant. I think that's the first job there, number nine, medical assistant, that may require college, like at least to have a associate's degree. Bartender, number 10, 11, administrative assistant, 12, marketing specialist. There are a lot of MBAs that go for marketing. That's a kind of a problem. Police officer, number 13, 14, electrician, 15, mechanic, 16, retail sales associate, 17, customer service representative, 18, carpenter. We're at 19, and I've only seen one job that may require some college, by the way. Office clerk is 19, 20, operations manager. What is an operations manager? Oh, I guess like a, okay, so that could take some college. That could need it. An operations manager creates hiring procedures and training benchmarks for new employees where they examine the company's processes and improve the performance. Okay, so I could see that being interesting. A line supervisor. So that's in a manufacturing plant. That's the person that makes sure the manufacturing line is working properly. Truck driver. Okay. Doesn't really need a college degree. Registered nurse. Probably does. Definitely does, I would think, actually. Software developer. Maybe, maybe not. I know a lot of software developers that are self-taught. 25, lawyer. Definitely. That's when we need one.
If you appreciate the work that we do here and you want to support this show, the biggest way you can do that is by supporting the products that we know, use, and love and that I recommend for you here on the show. The first that I want to talk about is MyPillow, literally one of my favorite products. The MyPillow Classic is what I use every single night. It's handled a lot of my neck pain, a lot of my back pain. As you guys know, I've been a competitive powerlifter since my early 20s, I've retired from that, but I still take pretty good care of myself, and I'm still pulling some heavy weights, as I pulled 500 last week on deadlift. And our favorite product when we travel is actually the MyPillow Travel Pillow, and it's one of the things that we actually give to absolutely everybody. It is a great product to fall asleep on, so if you want to go to mypillow.com/CYOL, there's some really great holiday deals over there. You can get up to 66% off of select products. Also, one of the biggest changes in my life over the years has been handling a lot of the parasites in my body. A number of years ago, I did a cleanse with Dr. Jason Dean, and we removed these things called liver fluke from my body. They were actually eating my liver. It was kind of crazy. And every few months, I do either a parasite cleanse or his full moon detox that he's doing right now. So if you want to head over to bravetv.store/CYOL and grab some of his amazing products over there. I know he has a great holiday special going on right now as well. Support our sponsors. They help the show to continue, and they help us to do what we're doing. And we could not do it without you. And you could do it just by using the power of the purse and supporting the products that we love. Thanks.
So when we look at it, those are the top 25 jobs. Out of those, I think maybe four actually need college. So I think what we need to take a look at is some major changes in the system. Because I think what has happened is you have these overinflated prices of school. Sorry, there we go. Finish my thought. And you have a lot of people getting degrees that aren't using them. As we mentioned, of the 37%, only about 22% are actually even using those degrees or applying to a job that even requires it. It doesn't even mean they're working in their major. If you're looking at people that are working in their major, I have another stat to that. Let me try and find that. 27.3% of college graduates have a job that's related to their major. That's a big deal. So now we're looking at that 37%. Let's take a look at our 37% times 0.27. So now we're only at 9% are actually using that degree that they went to school for. So I think we need to really take a look at this system. And I'm going to take a look. We're going to take a look at this a few minutes of kind of what that looks like. But I want to lay out the total problem of this. And then we also have the average student loan debt. So what is somebody coming out of school in debt with? The average student loan debt is $37,574. Private student loan debt average is $54,921. The average student loan student borrows over $30,000 pursue a bachelor's degree, and there's a total of 45.3 million borrowers that have a student loan debt. 92% of them have a federal loan debt. 20 years after entering school, half of all student borrowers still have $20,000 in outstanding loan balances. Now, here's the problem. Is that's also a huge drag down on the economy, because now those people aren't buying things. They don't have purchasing power. They have a mortgage without a house. So now, like, when they get out of school, sure, there's things like income-driven repayment and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, their need to make money is quite high. So they can't take a lot of entry-level jobs, which is frankly all they're qualified for. So we have a lot of issues here with what the system creates, because you're basically having somebody come out of school owning a small house that they can't live in, that they're still paying for. And you're seeing a lot of people defaulting on loans for that reason. So this is kind of the problem we're seeing. We're seeing people, 37% are going to school. We're seeing the ones that aren't going and they end up in a lot of other careers that maybe the education system could help them be better at those careers. Because those careers could make money if we figure out how to make them more productive, figure out how to make people train better, things like that. And also, we're seeing people come out of school with these massive loan debts and not a huge ability to make money. That's a problem. Now, here's something else. We're trying to stop our students from learning. If you guys remember, not long ago, we had James Lindsay on, talking about his brand new book, The Marxification of Education. And we've been talking quite a bit about woke ideology in schools. And you might have picked this up in the interview with James, but my undergrad degree is in Catholic theology. And one of the things you have to study to graduate Catholic theology is something called Catholic social teaching, which actually is what's called liberation theology. And it's kind of the oppressor and the oppressed, and it's brought into kind of this theological lens. So really what it is it's Marxism pulled into religion. And it's kind of this really weird, oppressor-oppressed relationship, blah, blah, blah. So there's this guy in Brazil, and once again, I recommend you listen to the whole episode with James Lindsay. I'm just going to give you a kind of a brief overview if you haven't heard it. There's this guy in Brazil named Paulo Freire. He's dead now, but this is, we're looking at the 70s and 80s. And he brings liberation theology into colleges of education. There was an individual that had kind of learned about Paulo Freire's work, and then he takes Paulo's work and brings it into schools of education. So what happens is these schools of education become like Marxist factories, and they're not about learning through education. They're about learning through the way of being a Marxist. So it's not, it's a very weird way of being educated. So we have kind of colleges have become these like woke factories that are more interested in people coming out with a Marxist ideology rather than actually even the ability to even do anything at all. So this is kind of our current situation in schools. We have people that are overpaying for an education, can't produce anything, are most likely coming out Marxist or having some viewpoints of that and not even realizing that's what they do. And we're having other people that are actually producing in society not having their skills looked at. So how do we handle this? There's a couple different ways I want to kind of go over here. All right. So the first thing I want to take a look at here. So how do we handle this differently? I think the first thing is we got to take a look at how college is funded. We get rid of the federal funding, first of all. So no, the federal funding should only be needs-based, but you have to take a look at the way it's charged. Number one, we have to take a look at the cost. Like it shouldn't be as inflated as it is. So it needs to go down. That's the first thing. And if somebody doesn't get another votive flower garden or herb garden or whatever, I really don't give a shit. So you'd pay 15% up front. And once again, like I'm not an economist. I'm sure somebody could come up with better numbers with these, but this is just an example. You pay 15% up front. Reason being, a student has to have some skin in the game. You can't just say, hey, college is free. If you screw up, who gives a crap? There has to be some skin in the game. So that's the first thing. Then, you know, and I just went with 5 years just because it's a round number. Maybe six is better. Maybe four is better. I don't know. 15% of your income, your first 5 years out of school, then goes to that university because they're going to be invested in you having skills, you being able to make money, you being able to advance. So the more money you make, the more money they make. That's free market. That's beautiful. So I think that's one way how we handle tuition. Another giant thing that's missing is apprenticeships, because I think you're seeing a lot of people going to college. Number one, that shouldn't be there of that 37%. Number two, you're kind of losing. We're in a really big need right now for trade jobs because we're in this more technocratic society where people are interested in Zoom jobs and software jobs that one day won't exist because of ChatGPT. But what we should be taking a look at is apprenticeships. So you see them more in the trades, but in the Middle Ages, you did them for a lot of things. Like you would work under a person for a year or a couple of years, and it served two purposes. I like to give the example of the seminary, and a lot of people don't think of the seminary this way. The seminary will train you to be a priest or a religious person or clergy, but it also serves the purpose of discernment. Do I want to do this? Do I like doing this? And I think it's important because if we did this in the career world, you know, you'd obviously be getting paid something for this. So you're making money rather than paying money to decide if you want to be in something. It's probably not going to be a lot of money, but it's going to be like a stipend of some sort. And because of that, if you go to college, you're like, okay, well, this is a career I do actually need education because here I've done this apprenticeship. I have some experience. I want to learn it. And I think you're going to see a lot more people going into the trade. So I think apprenticeships is a huge thing missing and a huge thing we should be bringing back. So then where do we go from there? I think we also take a look at kind of the lower level of education, meaning your grammar schools, your high schools. We still have to handle that. And I think one of the first things that has to happen is we have to get rid of the Department of Education. It lets the power go back to the state governors and the state legislatures, And then they can take a look at like what actually has to be in the curriculum we have students studying, because we should have things like civics, money management, bring back home ec. Like, people don't get life skills from school. They just get a lot of information that they're not going to remember because people don't concentrate on teaching them how to use words they don't understand. So we need to have life skills in school. I think it's very, very, very important, because you're going to bring out adults that can actually be causative rather than effect in their life. And getting rid of the Department of Education, I think, will be a big part of that. Bring the curriculum back to the states. Let each state decide what they want to do. And then guess what? You're going to see some states do a lot better job than others, and other states are going to be like, ooh, what are they doing? Let's take a look at what they're doing. What are they doing in Florida? Yikes, what are they doing in California? So you're going to see a lot of things like that. I think also Corey DeAngelis has been talking about this a lot. Another thing we need to do is school choice. And this could be through vouchers or anything like that. But give people a choice, whether it's in rural areas, whether it's in city areas, of where their kids get to go based on where their tax money goes. And that's going to help the system as well, because you're going to see in the inner city schools, they're going to have to do a better job. They can't just sit on money and not help these kids. Like, I think that's a real problem. But you're also going to see the private schools are going to have to do a better job, because they're going to want to have to keep the kids or pull the kids from other places. So that's another thing you're going to have to take a look at. I think vouchers are a really good thing. Obviously, you're going to have to look at kind of the intricacies within that, but I think that's important as well. Now, the final thing we're going to have to do is we got to get rid of the woke teachers. We got to show them, like, hey, you can't be here. You can't do this here. You're not going to help our kids. But if we do those things and fix education, we can fix a lot of things in our country, because we're seeing so many things caused by people that can't produce something, people can't add to society, people that are voting that have no idea what they're doing. So if we can fix education, we can fix so much of what's wrong in this country. And obviously, I'm not an expert, but I think that's a good place to start. So just to go over again what I think we could do to fix this, we're going to take a look at tuition. There has to be some sort of upfront payment. You can't just go for free, because then you're not going to be invested in it. 15% of your income your first 5 years out of school, because then the more money you make, the more money the school makes, they're going to do a better job. Apprenticeships have to come back, and people will decide, like, do I need to go to college? Do I want to go to college? Do I want this career? Because I think you're seeing a lot of people spend money on college tuition for careers they're never going to do anyway. Close the Department of Education and bring curriculum back to state legislatures and governors. I think that's really important. Bring back, school choice. So vouchers, let people decide where they're going to spend their money, and give people a chance to not just go to bad schools because that's the option. Make the schools be better. And also get woke teachers fired. Let's stop looking at ideologies and let's start helping kids to get educated so that they can do something. So that's what I think. And that's the look at education. I apologize if there was a little bit of coughing and stuff in this episode. I tried to do my best. We're almost there of this stupid dry cough I've had for 2 weeks, but I've been sitting on this one for a little bit and I've really wanted to do it for you guys. So I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you got something out of this. If you want to check out the show notes for this episode and everything mentioned in this episode, it's jeremyryanslate.com/1068. So don't forget to share this show with your friends, and to comment and like the show wherever you get it, and subscribe to us on any platform, because I can't do this without you.